with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All right, thank you once again in advance for your ongoing participation in the 50-50 raffle. We got another one coming up for Game 2 tomorrow night inside KeyBank Center, but you don't have to wait till the game. If you're anywhere in the state right now, you can buy the tickets. Scan the QR code on the screen or go to sabres.com/5050. We have a guaranteed jackpot of $100,000. It was close to $200,000 last night. We've seen $500,000. We've seen almost $400,000 multiple times. All of this presented by Northtown Automotive. And, of course, the proceeds from these 50-50 raffles go through the Sabres Foundation, get redistributed through our community, and it has been quite the hot commodity on game nights this year. And again, the reminder, you don't have to be in the building. You can get your tickets now in advance of Game 2 tomorrow night. So we've got 6:30 pregame coverage tomorrow night right here on MSG and our social platforms.
I just want to give a shout out because you talk about Sabres Foundation, and Razor and I went for a visit to the Seneca Street Community Development right down here from the arena. It's an after-school program. Kids go there, and they were gifted hockey sticks and net and balls and stuff like that for. And we there was face paint, and we signed autograph. And they're an organization that benefits from the Sabres Foundation. Yeah. And the people were fantastic. So that was a great visit by Razor and myself. And the whole community relation and everybody from KeyBank, too. Yeah. They were there, the KeyBank Foundation. So that was great.
Well, it continues. It's always been a staple of it. A team and its tie-in with the community. Rasmus Dahlin has certainly been noted for that. Now he's a Norris Trophy finalist for his on-ice contributions this year, and the captain has his team in a 1-0 lead against Montreal heading into Game 2 tomorrow night. Darren Dreger from TSN, our hockey insider, joins us once again. Dregs, great to have you with us. Just a quick thought, or longer, on this year's finalists for the Norris and the fact that Rasmus Dahlin is one of the three.
Yeah, and deservedly so. I think that we can all agree on that. I will be curious to see the rundown of the Norris Trophy finalists from all of those who have the privilege of voting, and I'm pleased to be one of those. It's a process. We've talked about it before. Rasmus Dahlin was high on my list right out of the gate, and I just like the way he plays the game, and we saw evidence of that in the opener of the series last night. You know, he's got that kind of, I mean, aside from the skill set, he has that innate ability where you want to cross-check him in the face lots of times. You know, just because he can get under your skin, he's physical.
Yeah.
He defends well, like the leadership qualities, on and on and on and on it goes. And when I think of, and I've told you about my process before, and I won't bore you, but I go to former Norris Trophy winners, and I do it varying points of the year. Mm-hmm. Because to me, it's important to acknowledge the season in its entirety. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll tip my hand a little bit here because I will get criticized after the fact. I didn't see Evan Bouchard of the Edmonton Oilers as a top five. Like, he's in that conversation, obviously. But it's mostly because of the second half of the season that he had. You know, I don't know that you should be able to wipe away the first 15 or 20 games when you're making mistake after mistake after mistake, and it ends up in your net. I mean, the Norris Trophy, even though it's drifted away many years ago into being, you know, honoring the most offensive defenseman, that's not the spirit of the award. It's not. And this year was difficult because Rasmus was right up there. Werenski, absolutely right up there. Someone identified to me, and this isn't a knock on Cale Makar. I guess it's somewhat of a balance if you look at Bouchard, if you look at Lane Hutson. If you study those players shift by shift, the offensive guys, what you recognize is, hey, they all make mistakes. Maybe it's different in Canada, because when Evan Bouchard makes a mistake, man, we're all over it. It's on every highlight reel, you know, north of the border. That's just the way it is. And maybe Makar doesn't get that same level of treatment. But I digress here. For me, I love the crop this year because you've got good, really good star all-round defensemen like Rasmus Dahlin, who very much are deserving of this level of recognition.
Dregs, were you on the panel yesterday with TSN for the post-game of the Habs? You were, right? So
The hot zone, Marty. call it what it is. It's called the hot zone.
The hot zone, yes, the hot zone. You guys do a long post-game hot zone with plenty of sound. Duffer and I were doing our own hot zone in the studio after the game as well. So when you were doing the hot zone and talking about Dahlin and talking about that group of defense by the, with the Sabres, Byram scoring another goal, do you think that is the one thing that separates the Buffalo Sabres to a lot of other teams in the NHL right now in the playoffs, and especially the Canadiens, that top four on the back end?
Yeah, it's tough to beat, isn't it? It really is. And sure, there was a mistake made. I think it was Owen Power on the one goal there. But, I mean, we're splitting hairs when we get to this point, second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Just everything about the approach. I thought Alex Lyon was really good again. Montreal admitted that they didn't have the start that they wanted. Obviously, they fall very quickly, 2-0. I think that there's a lot of things that went into that start, though. And for me, it starts with the defense and how quickly they transition the puck. It looked to me like the Canadiens at times felt like they were a little bit overwhelmed by the overall pace and the attack of the Buffalo Sabres. And, you know, we saw rush chance after rush chance after rush chance. And that's not something that the Montreal Canadiens really had to deal with a lot in their seven-game series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. So it was either Montreal did a better job in that series in containing and breaking up that transition game so, you know, that the Lightning couldn't establish that attack, or it's Buffalo just being better in those areas. But they certainly were in the opener of the series, and that, for me, starts with Buffalo's top four on defense.
Who would be your front runner right now for the Conn Smythe?
Ooh,
that's a good one. Well, I, you know, the jury is obviously still out, so it's so early. The way that Logan Stankoven got going for the Carolina Hurricanes in the first round against Ottawa, I was like, man, still this kid now keeps it up, and he's still going. Yeah. And I made this point in the hot zone last night after Montreal and Buffalo's game. And again, we're just seeing the early stages of this series. But, and maybe it's not the way they play, but maybe it is in the chemistry that's established. I do see some similarities in that second line of the Carolina Hurricanes, where you've got the undeniable chemistry now of Hall and Stankoven and Jackson Blake. Yeah. And what I'm getting and seeing from Doan and Benson, especially, and Norris. Yeah. So let's see how, you know, what adjustments. Marty St. Louis wouldn't talk about him post-game. Why would he? I mean, why would he show his hand in any way? And he did admit that he's got to rewatch the game and look at some of the areas that they've got to clean up. But, you know, historically, we know that the Stanley Cup is often won by the teams that maybe don't have the obvious emerge, you know, because your top line guys normally will neutralize each other. So who else is going to step up? I think that Zach Benson is just a fun kid to watch.
Oh, yeah.
I do. And, you know, the swagger he plays with, the edge that he plays with. I mean, we talk about big moments and how these young developing stars don't seem to be overwhelmed anymore. Well, he's exhibit A for me, at least in watching, you know, and he was good in the opening round against Boston. Don't get me wrong, but he stepped up his game for me in a big way last night.
A big Westerner that traveled to carnivals in the summertime. If you want to go back and watch Embedded on the Sabres, and he would go to city to cities with his family, setting up like the fair and the carnivals, and then he'd go to hockey school while they would. Benson has been fantastic. It's a lot of fun. Talking about Westerners, we had when you're not doing the hot zone, you're doing the insiders and all of that. We had Pierre LeBrun on the show yesterday. He talked about the Toronto situation and them winning the lottery. But I want to flip it to the Vancouver Canucks, because they don't have a GM. They're searching for a GM, and they were hoping to get the number one overall pick. They get third in the whole conversation, now dropping two spots. But what's the GM search looking like in Vancouver and that situation? Yeah.
They're whittling it down, but, you know, even as late as Tuesday, when Jim Rutherford, who also announced, by the way, that he's stepping away from his existing title of president, he will take on an advisory role. He acknowledged, I think he said they were down to five. But now that the draft lottery is passed, I feel like there's less of a sense of urgency in Vancouver. But it's also an important distinction to note that because Rutherford is stepping away from his title as the overseer of hockey operations in Vancouver, it will be the owner, Francesco Aquilini, who ultimately makes the hire, who hires the general manager. And I think that's why Pierre Dorion, with all due respect to Pierre, has lasted this long in the process, is because he interviewed very, very well, and there seemed to be, at least I'm told, a connection with Aquilini. Now, I don't know that that means that he is the front runner. It's his job to lose. You know, where's Adams in all of this? But it sounds like they're down to the last four or five, and they will want to get it done sooner than later because, you know, between now and the draft, it's not that far away. Most clubs are getting into their amateur meetings. Some are already finished up their pro scouting meetings. So that's work that you would want the new general manager to be heavily involved with and spearheading. And I got time for Ryan Johnson, the internal candidate in Vancouver as well. This young guy has been groomed to be an NHL general manager. It's up to Aquilini to decide whether or not he feels that he's ready, or he's draped or surrounded by individuals who can help him get to where he needs to be ready. So they're certainly nearing the final stages of that process in Vancouver.
Dregs, obviously it was confirmed yesterday what's been known for a while, or expected, I should say, for a while, about the salary cap upper limit being at $104 million. The one part that doesn't get talked about probably as much anymore is the floor at 76.9. Is there actually any news around the salary cap for you, whether it's this coming season or beyond? Like, are there any under the surface concerns right now with everything, or is everybody pretty good 1 through 32 in the NHL with how things are proceeding?
The commissioner would say that everybody is good. You know, the financial stability of all franchises has arguably never been better, and I believe that. That's not lip service. But Duffer, you asked the question in an appropriate manner in asking, you know, are there concerns? Okay, well, there are concerns, and there are concerns from some NHL owners that in the not too distant future, and this would be a good thing for players. I mean, the end of the day, the salary cap goes higher. The players get the same share, but you're talking about bigger dollars because the slice of the pie grows in financial terms. So is that going to encourage the haves and the have-nots? You're always going to have your cap-spending teams who, okay, you know, the cap goes to $130, $150 million. Well, they've got the revenue. They've got the hockey-related revenue to deal with that. You know, they're not worried about that. So they're going to spend their money on the top players, and they're going to try and build juggernauts. Not every team in the league can afford to do that. You know, not to go small market, because look, I our eyes would glaze over if I even tried to explain what the new version of revenue sharing is. Like, there are so many twists and turns in all of this, but what it means is a team like Winnipeg, the smaller market teams, get a bigger chunk in different ways, which will help them through the stages of the salary cap going up. But at the end of the day, you still only have so many seats, and you can only go to the consumer in your smaller market and say, okay, we're raising season tickets and everything that goes into that. So those would be the concerns from an ownership level. And fellas, you'd be surprised at some of the owners who I've talked to about this, who you would think shouldn't be concerned with it, but they are.
Is Carolina a team that is going to be like pushing back a little bit when it comes to the growth of the salary cap, just because we know their owner and the way that they work is very stingy over there? I would think they'd be very vocal with that.
Yeah, I would think so too. But in full disclosure, I've never had this conversation with Tom Dunn, and I have had it with others. I mean, there's not too much about the workings of the NHL, particularly around that salary cap process, that he likes. You know what? I have time for Dunnan's approach, because, you know, you're always going to find coaches who want to coach at the NHL level. He's got one of the best in the business in Rod Brind'Amour, who just loves that area. So, I mean, Rod could have made millions and millions more than he's making in Carolina and has made in Carolina if he was willing to move. He just likes what his family has in Carolina. I have time for that. You know, you think of Eric Tulsky. He's a sharp hockey guy. one of, if not the lowest paid general managers in the National Hockey League, but I'm sure he's very appreciative of the job that he has as one of 32 GMs. So Tom Dundon's a shrewd dude, as people in the NBA are starting to realize now.
Drakes, thanks so much. Enjoy the hot zone.
I will. I love that beard, Duffer. That playoff beard is something else. It is something.
That is for sure. Thankfully, it's a little softer than it was a couple of days ago.
Yes.
Probably emblematic of how I feel about myself on a daily basis. Yes. Join us for the drive-through rally. It's presented by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, and it's happening today. You can roll through Tops Friendly Markets on Orchard Park Road in West Seneca from 4 to 6 to pick up your street sign. We will have Sabretooth there and an awful lot more. You can go to sabres.com/playoffs for additional locations and details, and we will dive into Hart Trophy finalists next.